it is July and you can really tell it. You can feel it. You can almost hear it in the marrow of your bones. This great big, fantastic, unbelievable cake of yeast presided over by Big John, our lovely, friendly mayor, just sits here on the East Coast and marinates in its own July juices, vibrating, the tendrils reaching out. It's like some rare, exotic jungle plant, almost like a cosmic Venus flytrap, waiting to just gulp you down, friends, like little pieces of hamburger. I think tonight we'll make this show a salute to Tammy Wynette. I mean, you know, one of the great Americans of our time. I'll tell you, it is here. Oh, man. I just walked around. You know, to those of you who only know New York as an entity, I mean, you know, you live in Trenton or you live in Peapack, New Jersey, and New York is this big thing on the horizon. It's something else when you live in it. I mean, just live in it. You hear all kinds of sounds that the other ones don't hear, ever. Like today, about three times a year, the New Yorkness of New York begins to almost encroach on your, I suppose you can say your basic thinking. It's suddenly there. It's like somebody showing up at a party who's drunk. And you're suddenly very much aware of him, and otherwise you hardly notice him. And New York gets really drunk at this time of the year. It's a wild scene. And like about an hour ago, I'm walking right through the heart of Times Square. Now, perhaps you don't know where our studios are, but the studios here are... They're just about, I would say that Bobby Mercer could throw a ball from our front entranceway here. Bobby Mercer of the Yankees, he's not got that fantastic an arm. He could throw a ball from our front entrance and it would land right on the edge of Times Square, roughly. Wouldn't you say? And so this is how would you like your neighborhood? And it is my neighborhood. If I have a neighborhood, it is Times Square. I'm serious. I'm not being funny. If your neighborhood is defined as the place you spend most of your life and you know most about it, then it's your neighborhood. I mean, you know, it's not where you sleep particularly. It's where you live that is your neighborhood. And Times Square is my neighborhood. How would you like to have Times Square as your neighborhood? It's not a place you visit. It's a place you try to get away from occasionally. Well, anyway, tonight I'm walking right through the heart of my scene. So it's my place, and I'm over on the. This time I'm moving along around 44th Street, on Broadway, and it's in the lower 80s. It's about 75, maybe up to 80 degrees, and everybody's out. There are 28 million people out. Millions and millions of people are moving along through this vast. This thing. And it's hard to tell whether or not sometimes whether what's real and what isn't real. Of course, this is a thing that's been going on. Not yet. I'll give you the cue for the second one. Don't you do anything I don't tell you to do. That it's hard to tell sometimes, you know, when you're, especially in these days, some reason or not other, this, maybe it's because of total showbiz that's crept in on us. Maybe it's because, who knows? Maybe it's because it's 1970. But it's hard to tell whether things are real or not real sometimes. And it's like out of a scene of a Nathaniel West novel that was never written. And I'm walking along 44th, turn into Broadway. And there it is, the whole fantastic thing spread out in front of me. Signs, the whole flashing lights, fist fight. There was a fist fight going on. near Sardi's, a little short, fat guy, pushing 70, was trying to have a fist fight with a 6'2" cab driver because the guy had an off-duty sign on his car, and wanted $2 over the flag rate to take him to 80th Street. And they were mixing it up, and I kept walking on past. You see, in New York, you learn to walk fast sometimes. You just keep moving. You feel it in the air. And just around the corner, I fall in behind a half dozen Girl Scouts. And they've got these Girl Scout, you know, these green uniforms. I'm walking along behind them. And they had this troop leader with them. And all around was pure, total sensuality. A gigantic marquee that says Myra Breckinridge. Now, you know what Myra Breckinridge is, friends. This is not the Bobbsey twins. 422 porno shops, all lined up one after the other. And these Girl Scouts were walking through Times Square, you know, just digging it. And one of them said to the other one, and I'm right behind him, one of them said to the other one, "Where's Times Square?" Apparently, they didn't know they were in Times Square. So often, we don't know when we're in the middle of quicksand, you know. I'm walking along, and I see these guys, giving them the eyes. They walk past them. The Girl Scouts are totally oblivious to it. They figured it was some kind of a camp promotion for a new off-Broadway production in the Armpit Theater on Lower 4th Street, you know. Or some big poster company was promoting a new poster. And we're drifting along, just drifting and drifting. Guy comes past, believe it or not, right there in Times Square. Nobody's even looking at him. He comes past, he's wearing bell bottoms, you know. The vat dyed, hung out type bells. And he's walking along wearing these bell bottoms that look like they were sprayed on him, see. And the only trouble is he weighed 280 pounds. And he's drifting along, see, and he's got a light cherise nylon T-shirt that hung down on the back. And somebody had burnt the shirt tail off of it, and you could see it was half burnt up his backbone. And he was wearing a derby hat. And we just went drifting down through Times Square, me, the Girl Scouts, Myra Breckinridge. Overhead, this big jet whistles by, you know, on its way to NASA or someplace. And it was here, you know, this cake of yeast, inescapable. And it just hit me all, you know, just that sudden feeling of, this is it, you know. This is the center of the universe right now in 1970, New York. I'm sorry, it is. You know, the guy living in the middle of Babylon was not aware that they would be writing about Babylon for 2,000 years and more. He kept saying, "What a drag this town is. There's nothing to do around here. Nothing but a bunch of fags. Look at this. Nothing here, you know." And he puts it down. Well, here we are. We're in the middle of it, see. This is it. New York. You know, people all over the world, to most of them, I'd say to probably out of the 2.5 billion people in the world, New York is some kind of a Shangri-La. It's hard to believe to us who live here, but it is. I've heard people from Karachi to Bombay to Trieste say to me, "If I could only get to New York." And here I am, drifting along behind a crowd of Girl Scouts from New Brunswick, New Jersey, trying to figure out whether they were in Times Square. Well, are they in Times Square? Do you have to live here and know it to be in Times Square? Or do you just skim over the surface of this pond like a water bug? And across the street, I could see... No, this is, I'm just waving my arms rhetorically. Every time I wave my arms, five orchestras begin. And I notice across the street there, the Ohio ambassador's office over there. You know what they call the Ohio ambassadorial office. It's the Howard Johnson there. And I could see them going in and out of, this is the only thing they can, you know, that's familiar, you see. And next to the H.J. is this guy that I have seen ever since I've come to New York. He and I have a peculiar relationship. It's an odd kind of a hate relationship. It's not a love-hate relationship. It's a hate relationship. And he's the guy that sells these Mickey Mouse sweatshirts and all that, and that little cubby hole there, and he's always wearing a hat that looks like it came out of the Mickey Mouse Club, you know, the old Walt Disney show. And he's got his record playing there, and the people are drifting in and out and buying themselves Donald Duck pennants and Easter eggs that blow up and one thing and another. It's Times Square. There's that statue standing there in the middle of it all. George M. Cohan looking down on all of it. The great father of them all. And 5 minutes later, I'm in a political rally. Well, if you've ever been in a midtown Manhattan political rally, you know really what the meaning of the human zoo is. New York is probably the most political city in the history of man. Everybody has an opinion on anything. He doesn't think it's an opinion. He thinks it's a stated fact. And he'll hit you in the mouth if you have one that contradicts his stated fact. And so I drift into this political rally. There's a rock group. One of the worst rock groups I've ever heard in my life is up there blowing fuses for blocks around. 17,000 watts of audio and no talent. There's nothing worse than amplified mediocrity. And they're booming it out. And the signs are hanging all over in this peculiar ballroom. And the people, ladies with pink hair, I don't know where they come from. They come out of the side streets in Manhattan, ladies of indeterminate age who probably were alive when the mastodons roamed the continent. And they look like they're made out of Lady Esther face powder. They have a sort of a pinkish, bluish hairdo. And they carry fans, you know, with the wooden handle, the paper fans with the name of a funeral parlor on them. And they just drift back and forth. Reset that, honey. You've come to the end. Reset it in the middle. That's all. Don't cue it. Just let it go. No. Oh, what did you do now? Come on, easy. Turn it down. Holy smokes. And so they drift in and out. No, you turn the gain down before you do that. You don't do it on the air. See, it's the way it's done. So, which, see, I'm an engineer myself, you know. You're talking to a guy with a first phone. So, so nevertheless, now come on, get back here. Now come on, let's all gather around again. I'm drifting around through this thing, this party, this wild political party scene. And it's the kind of thing that there's only one guy I know personally, as a personal friend, who understood and appreciated this scene. Who was part of it and yet saw it. That was Frank Lesser. He would have loved this political rally with the ladies with the pink hair and all the public relations. There's a certain kind of PR man that handles out-of-work jugglers and lady hypnotists. And they were all there, scrounging the free booze, drifting around, patting each other on the back, yelling and hollering and handing out their PR material, seal acts, in and out of the hotel room, thousands of out-of-work vaudeville guys. Of course, an out-of-work vaudeville guy is a contradiction in terms. They're out of work per se. They drift in and out. This is it. This is New York. The New Yorkers, many New Yorkers don't even see this New York. I mean, somebody living in Kew Gardens might as well be in Rushville, Indiana. This is New York. This is where Big John is working. Say. And an hour before that, I'm in a posh East Side cocktail party. You know, the kind of cocktail party that's held in somebody's penthouse with a big terrace overlooking the East Side. And you could see the river and you could see Queens over there. And there's a third-rate comic walking around plucking people's elbows trying to get a booking from this crowd. And they ran out of drinks. The crowd started to get surly. There's nothing like a crowd getting surly 5 minutes after the crowd has gathered and there ain't no drinks, but there's a lot of potato chips. So they're beginning to get surly. You can see them moving in and out of the elevator. You know, one of those. It started out posh and wound up kind of a bad scene. And I go downstairs now. No drink at all. I had a lukewarm glass of flat 7-Up. They even ran out of ice cubes. I figured, how come they're running the party? They don't have anything here, see? So I get down on the street, and I'm walking past a guy who's leading three gigantic Afghan hounds, each one bigger than the other, you know, the kind that can swing on the rafters, you know, they're walking along there. And all three of them stopped right in front of me and did their business on the street there, you know. And I thought, well, you know, it's all part of New York. Speaking of being part of New York, this is WOR, New York. Come on, you just keep bringing that in there, honey. And turn the gain down when you're cueing it up. Don't do it yet. All the way down. And so I'm drifting along over to the Park Avenue now. I'm on Park Avenue, you see, and the cabs are coming up and down. It's right after the rush hour, see, and the cabs are real hungry, real hungry. And so they're moving fast, like water bugs. And I walk out in the middle of the street there. I hail a cab. And this guy slams on his brake. He slews to a stop, and the cab behind him clobbers him. Wham! Well, being a true New Yorker, I just walk on. The sound of crashing glass, and I could hear the sound of swinging fists. And I got out, and I walked down to the next corner and hailed another cab. Got in, and this cab driver, of course, New York is probably the only place in the world where many cab drivers today are totally hip. You know, becoming a cab driver is now a big thing among the hip. So I get in the cab, this guy's sitting there, he's got hair down to his waist, you know. I get in, and of course he immediately sees that this is not an out-of-towner. I look him in the mirror, and he looks me in the mirror, and I say, how's it going, man? So, you know, I says, where are you going? I says, head downtown. He says, how far? I says, oh, let's make it 45th Street, down by the station. And so we're drifting down through the traffic on Park Avenue. I said to him, how's it going? It's a drag, man. I said, you dig it? He says, nah. So I'm going to go out of town. I said, where? He said, you know, I got an idea one day I want to drive a cab in Tulsa. And I'm sitting in the back seat there, see, and I knew this guy wasn't last 8 milliseconds driving a cab in Tulsa. The first time one of these 7-foot ranchers gets in that back seat with this guy with his hair down to his waist, there would be words. So I didn't say nothing, see. It's New York, you know. It's New York. It's the whole part of the scene. So, he said, you ever been to Tulsa? I said, yeah. So, what does it look like? I said, well, how are you going to say what a city looks like, you idiot? He said, yeah, that's right. I said, what if I ask you how New York looks? So, I tell you. I said, well, how does it look? What he said, I can't say. I mean, you know, on a family radio station, how people are. So I said, what's the matter? What's eating you? And he said, ah, it's my old lady. I said, your old lady? I said, yeah. I said, what's the matter with her? He said, I can't get her off my back. I said, what's up? He said, she's pregnant. I says, oh, boy, that's a dirty trick. She sure pulled a dirty one on you there, didn't she? Yeah, you know. So I'm going to split. So we were drifted west a bit on 45th. I said, I think I'll get out of here when we get over to 5th Avenue. It's okay. So you're calling. So I got out. I paid him. And just then, three guys jumped in the cab. And they headed downtown. I saw his hair floating in the breeze. The wind is blowing into the open window of his July cab. And these three guys are big butter and egg men. I mean, real Denver types. Yeah, and the first thing they said, I knew what they were going to say. Nudge him in the back. Hey, where's the action, Mac? Where's the action, huh? And they drifted on downtown, and I thought to myself, well, there goes three guys that are going to be clipped, sheared, blued, and you know what it, before the night is out. The butter and egg men are in town. It's July. Yeah, you could hear the beat and the waves and the rush of human passion just flowing through this town tonight. I mean like it ain't never gonna end. Ain't never gonna end. Here I've already gone to 2 parties in 1 night and nothing. Glass of half flat 7-Up. That political party, they had nothing but buttons handed out over that one. I don't want no buttons. So what do? I go down into the fashionable backstage room, the fashionable back room of 44th Street Nathan's. And I go downstairs there, you know, and I get myself a plate of clams at Nathan's. This is the pure New York. You could not go in and buy yourself a plate of clams just off the street in a place like Tulsa. And I go drifting downstairs with my plate of clams, with my hot sauce. Had myself a no-cal celery tonic, which, by the way, I can't stand. So I'm sitting down there eating my clams, and a guy walks up to me, big, tall guy wearing purple and green bell-bottoms. He's out of clams. That's okay. I've been thinking of getting some. They okay? I say, yeah. I said, okay, man. He hops on the escalator and goes on up. See, he's going to get the clams. Who do I see coming down the same steps down into the fashionable backstage room of the 44th Street Nathan's, but one of the top leading film and musical stars of our day, bagged to the ears, drifting in with apparently her manager. I knew her. So I waved. No, just keep it behind me, honey. I waved, and she gave me a funny look and went on with her plate of hot dogs and French fries and ketchup. New York, you know. That's there. So I finished the clams, and I go back up, drift down into the heat again. You can just feel that heat come drifting in. It hits. And you can smell Jersey, you know. There's certain nights when the wind is right and everything is really, really vibrating. You know, when the sense of life and decay is all here and rebirth and all. You could even smell a Hackensack River right here in the middle of Times Square tonight. You could smell Secaucus in the breeze. There are nights when you can smell Secaucus forever. And it hit me, see. That great breath of air. And I walked down past the newsstand where there were 552 underground newspapers. Underground. I mean, how underground can a newspaper be when you can get it on every Times Square newsstand? That's underground, huh? So I look at a few of these, you know. It's one I particularly caught me. It's his name, Guts. Looked at that. Then I went past this place where they got all the posters, you know, with the rhinoceroses and all that stuff. You know, great folk art, you know. You can just see that. It's such a... it epitomizes the taste of our times. Only in this day and age can Zsa Zsa Gabor be a major figure. I'm drifting along there and looking at the posters, and 3 nice ladies come out of the Howard Johnson, and they stop and look at the posters. Say nothing, just look. 3 nice ladies from Peoria. And then I go on down past a place where they're selling shoes. You know, in New York, you can buy red, white, and blue, and purple shoes. Any kind of shoes. You can buy shoes at Whistle Dixie in the dark. The shoes are an erotic thing in New York along 42nd Street. This is, you know, the shoe stores are side by jowl with the porno shops. And there's something erotic about shoes on 42nd Street. Big yellow orange sign says adult 8mm super wide films now in sound and in color. Yeah, my hometown. Then I walked a little bit east on 42nd, past that great big hole in the ground where Stearns used to be. I miss Stearns. I really do. I never thought I'd miss Stearns. I miss Stearns, the big hole in the ground, and I see 2 guys breaking into a Mustang. I wish them luck. Move on. I knew they was going to have trouble. You break into a Mustang, especially the one of that year that's got a bad differential. I know they're going to be disappointed with that car. They're going to use it as a getaway car. They're in trouble, friends. I drifted on down to 5th Avenue again and turned left. Started to move on up past the Mayflower Donut Shop. thought briefly of going in and getting myself one of them donuts. I saw there was a drunk sitting in there having an argument with a clerk. Figured, well, you know. I stayed for a minute in front of the Sony telephone, telegraph, radio, transistor, God knows what shop. They're always going out of business on Fifth Avenue, you know. It says discontinued model sale, must clear out immediately. I looked at all the knives in the Hoffred shop there. Two or three guys were walking around doing the same. Then there was another shoe store where there were some. Have you noticed that there's a distinct Roman Empire trend among shoes? You know, the sandals that go all the way up to the knees, the centurion thing. This guy's standing there looking at a centurion set of sandals with his wife. And they got a little kid. He's just standing there looking. He says, all of a sudden, he says, what you need with that is one of them helmets with the horns sticking out of the top. I said, yeah, that's right, man. And some grapes. He said, yeah, grapes. There's a pause, and then all of a sudden he says, yeah, you need some of them handmaidens. Don't they have handmaidens? And I thought to myself, I never really did see a handmaiden. I don't know what a handmaiden does, really, you know, when I stop to think about it. I mean, that's not a geisha. It's all New York, man. New York. Yeah? Barbara Streisand's town. Big John is in charge. The cab driver, he is our cockle shell to eternity. Up and down the streets he goes with his little lights, demanding a $2 shot over the flag rate to take you across the River Styx. Yeah, only the dead know Kew Gardens. Yeah. New York, fun city. So I had a couple of hours to kill, so I went to the only really good place to kill a couple of hours. Down to that 6th Avenue, Horn and Hardart. You know, various H&Hs have various, well, psychological and sociological and status levels. The one on 6th Avenue there in the 40s, that's kind of a middle ground, silent generation, silent American H&H. It's neither showbiz, nor is it the other end of the scale. Just a lot of people sitting around. And I drift in. Have myself a cup of coffee. Watch the scene go by. I saw a guy pick up a bun. Somebody left his tray at the next table. Went back to get himself another cup of coffee. The guy jumped up at the table on the other side, grabbed a bun and went out. And I figured if he needed a bun that hard, you know, man, go to it. I mean, buns come and buns go, but hunger stays. So I sat there a while. Suddenly a girl came in, sat down at the table with me. And I'm, you know, drinking my coffee. All of a sudden she says, you look like you're in showbiz. She says, how can you tell that? She says, you just look like you are in showbiz. I said, well, I am. She says, can I get in showbiz? How do you get in showbiz? I said, well, gotta know somebody. She says, that's what I thought. I said, well, I gotta go now. She says, gee, it must be great to be in showbiz. And out I went at the 6th Avenue, showbiz street, man, all the way down. I stepped over all those beer cans and cigar butts, and there was a drunk laying in the doorway there with his bottle of Thunderbird next to him. One shoe was off, you know. Looked like he kind of sprung a leak or something, seeing he's laying there hollering out at the crowd as they went by. I waved at him. So are you, buddy? I said, how does it feel to be in showbiz? And what he said again, the guard said, that's the problem with being on a family station. You can't really say what people say, see? He said it. Three ladies turned around and says, what did he say? I said, you don't want to know, honey. I drifted on down 6th Avenue. This is my street, you know, 6th Avenue. I mean, the more poignant, traumatic scars of my soul all happen at 6th Avenue is where it is. It's not 5th Avenue. It's not Madison Avenue. Madison Avenue is just a big, busy street. No character at all. But 6th Avenue. Somehow you sense 6th Avenue is saying it for all time. I mean, it's there, man. I walk along. Says it's July. The tourists are coming into town. Fire Island is in full bloom. Oh, yeah. Jules Pfeiffer's at Martha's Vineyard. Only the real New Yorkers have remained. The hard-bitten center hardcore. It's just us here to hold down the fort now. The New Yorkers and the tourists. Sometimes I go out and play tourist. Really do. I get in the cab and I say, are we going uptown or are we heading downtown? And I see the guy glance up in his rear view mirror. Oh, I got a live one. I'm going to charge this guy $17 to make three blocks over to Sardi's, you know? We're going to go by way of LaGuardia. See? I like to play that way, you know? It's just that. Of course, this is all part of the scene, you know, playing it for what it is, living for what you can get out of it. And so sometime, you know, I get in a cab, and there's no way, you know, when you get in a cab, you know, when you walk into a cab, a little of that music, baby, a little of that music. You get into a cab, you know, and you get this sense of total movement, all of it, going on all over. Sometimes, you know, I had a friend one time who used to dream about cabs. Now, to him, a cab was the most romantic, the most totally realized vessel of passion and dreams that man had created since the clipper ships. A New York cab. And you are listening to a guy who has spent more time in New York cabs than the average, than the average hacky who's pushed him for wags himself. Now there is a New York phrase. How many of you know what wags stands for? In the cab world. Well, I got into a cab afterwards. I finally decided I was going to head back. And on the side of the cab, it said, Honest Leo. I got in the cab and I said, Honest Leo. By God, Honest Leo. And I see this guy's neck get red. He turns and says, What do you mean? Honest what? I said, Honest Leo. I says, How come you got Honest Leo on the side of your cab and it says Clifford on your hack license? He says, I ain't Honest Leo. I said, I can tell that, Honest Clifford. He glances up in the rearview mirror. He says, what, does it say Honest Leo on the side of my cab? I says, it does. So I'll be damned, never knew it. He never looked at his cab. I said, how long you drove this cab? He said, well, 2 years I've been driving this one. I said, you never knew it said Honest Leo on the side? He says, no, does it really? No kidding. I says, yeah. So I got out of 40th Street, and he got out after me and went around and looked at the side of his cab. I said, see what I said? Honest Leo. He said, well, I'll be damned. He never knew he was driving the Honest Leo cab. Oh, yeah. I one time got in a cab here in New York, had on the side, Bad Cab Service, Inc. Somebody with a sense of humor. Bad Cab Service, Inc. So it's, you know, it's New York, man. You just can't miss it. All the cleaning ladies sitting around listening to the New York Yankee ball game with Denny McLane pitching out there in Detroit. That's the way it's really pronounced, you know, Detroit. And where I say these things, it's Tennessee. So with you, you know how to talk American. It's Tennessee, Detroit, Cincinnati, New York, and Syria, the center of the globe. We are the most hated, most loved, most feared, most misunderstood, most enigmatic people on the face of the world. Absolutely. Scratch any European, and he'll give you 15 different opinions of Americans. Almost all of them contradictory. Scratch any Oriental, and he'll give you 327 opinions of the American, and also deliver them from the lotus position. I say, here we are. Here we are. It is New York. It is July. Come on, bring it big, baby. Okay, Ron. All right, hang it. There you go, baby. Huh? What's that? No. All of it. Kill it. What's that? Oh, I know. Did you enjoy that? Does it capture some of it for you guys in there? I mean, you know, here I'm talking to my fellow New Yorkers in the control room there. I mean, you know, New York is like... It's like a sexual experience or something. There's no way to put it down in words. It can take all kinds of different, totally unexpected twists. You may dig this city for 5 minutes and hate it for 24 hours. Inexplicably, just like that. Like last night, I was driving down 7th Avenue in a cab. You know, you have millions of great experiences in cabs. Like the other night, I hailed a cab at 40th and 6th. It was about midnight. And the guy, you know, cab driver sitting in the front there, and he had the look, vague look of a student or something. And I got in and I said, I want to go down to the village. There's a pregnant, just a kind of a slight pause for a second. See, it's dark, you know, it's almost midnight. See, I said, I want to go down to the village. And he said, excuse me, he said, would you direct me? How do I get there? I said, what? He said, would you direct me on how to get to the village? I said, okay. I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing, you know, to get in a cab, and the cab driver says, how do I get to the village? I says, well, all right. I says, hey, what you do? We're on 6th Avenue. Now, that's an uptown street. What you got to do is turn left here, get over to 7th Avenue, and we'll go downtown on 7th Avenue. And so he says, oh, okay. So we put the car in gear, and we make the turn, and we suddenly are crossing 7th Avenue. See, we're going right across 7th Avenue. I said, hey, where are you going, man? I said, we're going to go down 7th Avenue. He says, oh, is this 7th Avenue? It's the first cab driver I ever rode with who didn't know where 7th Avenue was. I mean, it's hard to believe, see? So we turn down 7th Avenue, we're drifting down, and he says, hey, I hope you're not bugged because I don't know anything about New York. I said, no. I said, that's fine. I said, a lot of people don't. And he says, I'm just new as a cab driver. I said, well, I would hardly have noticed that. I mean, you look like you're so with it up there at the front there driving the cab. And he said, well, I really don't know anything about driving a cab. No, that's right. So, you know, we drifted on down through the midnight, you know, the midnight sound and incidentally, the midnight cowboy. It's very superficial. You know, this isn't really the way Times Square is. For those of you who believe that Times Square is the way, you know, the midnight cowboy movie had it to be, that's one tiny part of it. That isn't Times Square. Times Square are millions of things. In fact, I'll never forget one day being in a guy's office over a theater right in the middle of Times Square, looking down. And we're looking down into Times Square. And this guy's probably as straight and as solid a citizen as the world can offer. Fantastic, a tremendous financial tycoon. I turned to him and I said, how does it feel to own Times Square? He does. I'm serious. I'm not kidding you, rightly. He does. He said, oh, well, he says, you get used to it. I said, yeah, I guess you do. We got in the elevator and went down. That's all right, I'll do the year one. Everybody's a little worried about it. So I'll do the year one commercial at this point. If you want to know, you know, this, you know, speaking of the of that year one spot, I have a vague feeling that this year one poster is about as New York a creation as has come out, believe me, in a long time. Don't you agree? It's a strange, not really New York. Yeah, I guess it could be. Because only people of this type can see the world through this peculiar kind of curved lens. If you want to take a look and own one of the oddest posters of our time, I suspect that 25 years from now, a lot of things which we take for granted, I mean, you know, that are selling for a buck or $2 around, a lot of these things are really going to be museum exhibits maybe 25 or 30 years from now. Because we're passing through a peculiar time. And they're going to say, there was a time when this thing meant things to people. For example, somebody sent me a Little Orphan Annie Ovaltine shake-up mug. Now, do you know what an Ovaltine shake-up mug is? Well, this is a giveaway that was given away by a radio show sponsored by the Ovaltine company. Well, now that was probably given away by the millions, you know, people, and nobody paid any attention. In 1970, an Ovaltine Little Orphan Annie shake-up mug was worth roughly $200 as a museum exhibit, right? So I don't know what this year one poster is going to be like when, you know, when eventually it all settles down. But I have a suspicion that this poster, along with a few other things I've seen, are going to be peculiar elements of our time. If you'd like to order one, it's $2 worth, I'll tell you that. Drop a $2 check or money order into the mail and address it to Year One, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York, 10001. But by the way, they'll send your money back if you're not totally flipped out about it. So no questions asked either. But New York, you know, funny thing about New York. A couple of weeks ago, somebody wrote a piece in Ad Age. This is the big advertising. It's the trade journal of the advertising world. And this guy had been the creative ad copy director of one of the big agencies here in New York. And he left New York, apparently, to take a job out someplace in the Midwest. And he wrote a piece in Ad Age, how it feels to leave New York after you've been totally immersed in it. And suddenly you're in a whole new scene. And boy, there's nobody more immersed in New York than the copy chief of a major agency on Madison Avenue, I can tell you that. And among other things, he says, you know, it's amazing what you miss. He says, you don't find it anywhere else in the world. He says, out here, there is no Long John Neville. There is no Gene Shepard. He says, there is no Bill Mazur. I was amazed, you know. That's like saying there is no, he's living in Fort Wayne, there is no Statue of Liberty here, no Nathan's, no Radio City Music Hall, no crowds of buses of ladies with blue hair have come in to see the newest Doris Day Rock Hudson picture. A monument, by God. It's nice to know you're missed. New York, the fun town, a vast cake of yeast. Cooking away here on the East Coast, it is Babylon multiplied by 7 million, friends. Sodom and Gomorrah on the Hudson.